Hello, welcome to the Lately in JavaScript podcast. This is episode 21, and we're going to try once again to face the challenges of recording this podcast.
Did you say my face was challenging? Chrome. Is that what you just said? Oh, sorry. Yeah.
No. I was going to get about to talk to you. Okay. Well, now that you mention it, hello, Michael.
Hello.
Actually, hello, Special K. How are you doing? Oh, great. We have a live performance.
Yes, there you go.
Direct from Raleigh. Woohoo!
Okay, I'm done for now.
Okay, well, today we have a possibly very busy episode, so we're going to cover several topics very, very briefly because we want to pack them all in 1 hour of show. We try to not go out of the schedule, and we're going to start talking about several JavaScript related topics, starting about a project named the Shumway, I think.
Shumway, yes.
Shumway from Mozilla.
I got roped into Shumway a while ago. This guy at work was trying to sell me on joining his pyramid. He said if I get to the bottom, I could be at the top of the pyramid at some point. Oh, this is Mozilla Shumway.
Well,
totally different.
Right. What were you thinking? Well, anyway, this is basically a project which is a virtual machine for interpreting Flash movies or whatever are those called in the Flash domain. And I think Google had a similar project, right? For executing Flash movies in JavaScript. I don't know. I just do not remember the name, but it seems to be.
That was so long ago. Quit living in the past, man. Shumway is where it's at because it's got a better name. And it works. I tried it. For me, it worked.
Well, what did you try? Anything?
They had a race car demo. They had a demo of a race car. It was a Flash game where you drove a car around. I'm doing this thing with my hands, but I don't know. Am I being recorded if it's on you?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Hello. It was a car that raced around, and you could move with your keys. And I think it was a regular SWF file that was just being interpreted by Shumway.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It seemed to be interesting. I don't know what is the future of that project, but I think it's yet another nail in the Flash coffin. And it's a lot. It's one of those many JavaScript developers are hoping for, so you can get rid of any Flash dependencies. And, well, there's not much to say about that, so we're going to move on to the next topic, this time about an announcement made by the jQuery developers.
Hang on, I got the music for the announcement. Okay, I got it. Da-da-da-da! I didn't know what notes to play for that, so we'll just do that. That's the da-da-da-da! Pretend I was a trumpet and blow me. Oh,
okay.
Sorry, we're going to have to put an X rating on this now.
Okay. You convinced me. I almost believe it was a real trumpet.
Okay.
Anyway, talking more seriously about this topic, it was basically the announcement of the plans for future versions of jQuery. Basically, there will be, I don't know if I can call it, two forks, one 1.9 and 2.x versions. And basically, what distinguishes these versions is the support for older Internet Explorer versions. So basically, for 2.x, they intend to drop the support for Internet Explorer 6, 7, and 8. And the 1.9 version will have, as I would say, support to those Internet Explorer versions, but it will still be compatible. So in the end, it will be up to the developer to decide which versions of the jQuery you want to use, depending on whether you want to support all the IE versions or not. So I think this is an interesting approach, although it raises a lot of discussions on whether jQuery is dropping Internet Explorer support or not, but
Well, they are. They're dropping some IE support.
For me, it was clear. You know, they even had an article, a follow-up article to clarify this topic, but...
Yeah, I mean, Microsoft themselves have urged people to not use the older browsers and to get people to upgrade. Yes, they are offering support for it, but I think they're doing it somewhat under duress. They would like people to move on to modern browsers to let them integrate, because you say IE, and people still think, some people will still think it's IE6 or IE7 maybe. You know, development now, from my viewpoint, if you have a choice, you should be targeting IE8 or 9 and going forward. And I realize some people don't have a choice. They're working in corporate environments. Well, then they're only going to get one more good release of jQuery, which has been given to them for free, and it's only going to work for the next few years for them. I mean, it's they got to do it at some point.
Well,
I'm glad that they've announced it. Yeah. They could go keep using Netscape 4 if they want as well.
Well, I don't know if jQuery would work well in that browser version, but I think this is a reasonable decision, in my opinion. If you want to still support those older browsers, that's fine. And the advantage of this newer jQuery 2 release is that it will be smaller because it won't include the code to support those older browsers. And I think it's wise because jQuery is getting reasonably large, and if they do not take care of cutting on the size, they probably get a too bloated library that nobody wants to use. So it seems to be the right thing to do, at least in my opinion, of course.
I don't disagree with you. I wish I did, but I don't.
Okay, and actually, it's good that you don't disagree because we don't have much time. We still have a lot of topics to cover.
We'll just move on.
The next topic is to just briefly mention there is this page with trends on JavaScript uses statistics in terms of what library versions are being used in different browsers. Actually, I'm not sure if there is a partition by browser, but I misunderstood this. This is jQuery usage on by sites, not by browsers. You can see that jQuery is largely dominant and appears many sites. Actually, I was joking with a friend that now there are less and less JavaScript developers. There are more jQuery developers. Many people just is finding hard to develop without jQuery because it solves a lot of, I would say, portability issues. You don't have to deal with all the conditional code that would be necessary to support different browsers. And this is a
slight rant here.
Going back to the previous topic.
Go ahead. Carry on.
No, I just wanted to comment that now that jQuery is about to give people the choice to drop the older browsers, and a lot of people have chosen jQuery to not have to deal with the portability issues. It is interesting that this news of dropping the older versions is coming now. But jQuery people made clear that they want to give the developers the choice to support older browsers, keeping with the older version or dropping the older versions of the browsers by using the newer jQuery 2.x. But that I want to mention. Anyway, you were going to talking about something about rent.
Just briefly, related, when you mentioned people are not JavaScript developers, they're jQuery developers. I used to get upset is too strong a word. I thought it was a problem. I don't think it's that much of a problem. I think it's people want to make it a problem, but we have similar, especially in the PHP world, we have people who are WordPress developers. They're not PHP developers. We have people who are Drupal developers or Joomla developers, not PHP. We have this in largely in JavaScript with jQuery. People know jQuery. They don't necessarily know all the underlying stuff. The only problem comes is when they try to take that experience and do other stuff outside of jQuery. Frankly, when I meet people who are really deep into jQuery, some of them are because they know JavaScript very well. But I do come across people that are just very talented developers who happen to focus on jQuery, and that's what they're best in. Similar, I know some people who are just WordPress people, and they're fantastic. I mean, I'm a much better PHP developer than they are. They're better WordPress developers, and it is a separate beast. So yeah. I think the market, we are such a web technology, such a large and influential market, where it's being used everywhere these days, the idea of having specialists or people that only know certain things, that's, I really don't think it's that bad. I used to think it was a bigger problem that the craft was in crisis and all that. And I think there's plenty of room for people that want to be the true masters of technology, of underlying technology, versus just a particular tool set. There's a lot of Ruby people who are not Ruby developers. They're just Rails developers. We need to get over this.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Anyway, well, I think this is a natural consequence of the fact that there are so many technologies derived from the dominant technologies that you would need to know to be a developer that could handle everything, that it is hard. You need to specialize on something embrace that area. That's why you see WordPress developers rather than PHP developers.
In some ways, that's where the money is, too. People, when they put an ad job out, they don't say, we want a JavaScript person. They say, we want a jQuery person, because they've got 2 years' worth of jQuery code, and they need somebody to come in and maintain it and extend it. That's what they need. So.
Yeah, exactly. And it is interesting, one thing that I noticed in the job postings. I didn't have many job postings in JS classes, but in PHP classes, practically all jobs require something related with JavaScript. And we can see clearly that jQuery is one of the most requested capabilities from web developers in general.
Yeah.
And also on the PHP side, WordPress is quite dominant, and this is probably a bit frustrating for all those fans of those frameworks that would hope that their framework of preference would be preferred, and in the end that the market is demanding for WordPress developers.
Yep.
I don't know if you can even call WordPress a framework. It's more a platform inside the platform, I would say.
In the right hands, there's a lot that can be done with it. Frankly, when I look under the hood, I still don't like a lot of what I see, but it's pragmatic. Yeah. It puts food on people's table. You know, let them be.
And it's what the market is asking.
Yeah.
And on the JavaScript world, I would say that jQuery is clearly dominant. Personally, I do not use it much. Actually, I don't program so much on the JavaScript side, but I can understand why jQuery is so dominant. The way things go, and whoever prefers some other library, too bad. And life is a bit different than you hope.
You had it up on the screen. The pie chart has spoken. jQuery is it. The big red pie chart there showed it. That we really don't even need to talk about it. The pie chart spoke. Move on.
Yeah.
There you go. I didn't even need to speak.
I imagine that you are happy because you said before that you have become such a jQuery fanboy lately.
Fanboy is a little strong of a term, but
you are not alone, I suppose.
Well, I am. Well, actually, right here I am, I think.
In the world of developers that prefer
jQuery,
of course. Well, but that is just one topic that we plan to cover. Michael, you also want to comment on an interesting library. I think it's a library, right?
Yeah. Was this what you had resumable uploads? Let me see if I can share my screen. Screen share. Can I do that?
Yeah,
I'm trying. We shall see.
You showed the link to me before, and
I
looked at it, and I think what could summarize that that library is that it does something that's somewhat new, which is resumable uploads, right?
Yep. So I'm sharing my screen. Are you seeing it here?
Yeah, sure.
Sharon. Look at that. That's my aunt's name. Hello, Aunt Sharon. who just had a birthday a couple weeks ago, same day as my mother, 7 years apart. Happy birthday, Mom, who's in Moscow. Hello, Matt, if you're watching. Dasvidanya. I found this a few weeks ago, and I mentioned it on my other podcast. This is a resumable uploader, and it's called D&D Uploader. You can see it here. I don't have any large files to demonstrate with this right now, but you can also take a look at Phelad's D&D Uploader GitHub page. The interesting thing here, the resumable aspect, is that it uses the local file system access. So older browsers, like your, I think your IE6 and 7, I don't think would have access to this, but you drag a file in, and it uses HTML5 JavaScript access to the file system, and it will read the file in, and it will break it up into chunks and store those chunks in local storage. So if you had, say, a 40 meg file you were uploading, it's going to chunk it up into multiple smaller chunks and upload each of those. And they're going to negotiate the upload of each one of those sequentially. But if you only upload, say, 2.5 of these things, and then you close your browser, or you come back, you lose your internet connection, you come back a day later, it can send up the rest of the files, and you can process them on your server once you get all of them. So, and the guy who wrote this had said, I'd initially found some discussion on this on Reddit, and then we're linking here to his page here. He said somewhere that he didn't think that he'd found another example or two of other people trying something similar, but they didn't work very well, and he thinks his works pretty well. So I bumped into this a while ago, and I thought from a kind of a JavaScript and HTML5 client-side engineering thing. It is a nifty hack, if nothing else. I don't know how many people need something like this on a regular basis. It may be, though, that it's not one file that's chunked up, but you could use a similar technique to just queue up, say, somebody uploading 30 files, just drag and drop them, and then let it process in the background until you're completely done. Anyway, I don't want to rant too much about it, but it was a really neat tool, I thought.
Yeah, it seems interesting, but I did not quite understood how it would work if you got into the details. Does it rely on some standard browser features, or
it needs to have local storage support, which most browsers have some local storage support, and it needs access to the file file object. I'm not sure what it's what the actual technical term is. There's a file object which can actually read you give it a file name, and it can read the data from that file on the file system into local memory, into the JavaScript memory. It will then parse that out and chunk that up into various chunks in local storage. So it's a neat neat approach.
So it relies on having access to the file from JavaScript?
Well, if you're uploading a file from your drive, you have access to it, and modern browsers would also have access to the data client side before it's uploaded.
Yeah. Well, I was just wondering because for security reasons, JavaScript code does never have access to the contents of the file itself. It can access to metadata.
Yep. It's had it for a while. 2 years ago, I think, or a year and a half ago, I wrote something. I think we even talked about it on this podcast at some point. I wrote a JPEG or an image shrinker that would, if you were uploading a large file, it would shrink it or resize it client side and then upload the thumbnail. So rather than trying to upload a 6 or 7 meg file, it doesn't work it doesn't work in the IE6s of the world. I don't think it worked on Firefox 3 or 3.5, but it works on modern Safari, WebKits, Chrome, modern Firefox, modern IE, I believe, IE9 it worked on too. So
that's interesting.
That one might require IE10.
Yeah, so it probably uses the file API on the browser side, and
yes.
On the server side, does it require any special treatment of those?
He had some sample code there. Effectively, you're just uploading multiple chunks of data. So something on the server needs to know to piece them together into one file. So you're going to need to stitch them together. You've got those things to do, but if you're getting around this real problem of maybe bad internet connection, flaky internet connection, and just to have something continuously trying to upload in the background for you is a probably a very useful tool in some cases.
Yeah, well, that's interesting because I was thinking that you probably was playing with headers. request headers to send the file and to tell and the server side which chunks of file it was sending.
That may be going on as well, but I would imagine that something still needs to intelligently grab and parse those headers and deal with it. Because if my connection drops for 20 minutes and I come back again, I have not used it. I haven't had any large enough files where I've even had a need for this right now, so I just thought it was a cool thing to share with people.
Sure, that's quite interesting and innovative, because I have not seen anything like that, and probably other people find interesting, because the problem of dealing with very large file uploads is very old, and I don't think the current breed of browsers is solving it very well. Well, at least there are some solutions to show some progress bars, but I don't know what happens if for some reason a file upload stops in the middle.
Two minor points here. One, because I did a mobile file upload project back in April, and the just using Android, mobile Android, and having it take a picture and then upload that. A picture that a camera takes is only a few megabytes, but especially over, maybe if you got bad, your connection goes in and out, being able to do this in mobile browsers, modern mobile browsers, I don't know if it works, but if it doesn't, I'm assuming it probably will at some point. It seems to work on modern browsers, and web kits would probably be fine. Second thing is, this might be a bigger issue at some point in the fall, iOS 6 for mobile devices will allow file upload in the browser in Safari. Finally, it only took them 4 years to get this thing out. But I think we'll probably see more file upload processing happening from mobile devices, and because of the intermittent connectivity of that, or the potential for that to be on and off, even if you're switching cell towers, something like this will probably be more required in the next year or two.
Well, actually, more in the past than currently, because in the past you would have even weaker internet links. Now, at least in some parts of the world, there are already 4G connections. Here where I live, definitely, but at least now there are better links. Anyway, this is an interesting topic. Maybe we can get back to this in the future, because I'm sure it addresses the needs of many developers. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to move on with the next section of this podcast, now mentioning an article that I've wrote just recently, and it's basically about matters related with the browsers, evolution of the browsers, and
I don't think we can talk about evolution on this podcast, can we?
Well, at least of the browsers, I think we
totally
can unproven. Talk a bit about
just a theory. Go ahead.
And anyway, the idea of the article was more to talk about the features of the browsers that have been evolving on matters that interest developers. And the article basically is a follow-up of another article that I wrote last year, which was about the top 10 features. My own top reasons why Firefox is still better than Chrome for web development, despite, as I mentioned also in another article 2 years ago, I've switched to Chrome because I could not
stand. It was an F for Firefox. It was an F.
Firefox was sort of at least, and Chrome was much better in terms of performance. So I have decided to switch, and this seemed to be the general feeling, at least in my opinion, of other developers that have been switching to Chrome, and not just developers, users in general. And the article shows the evolution of the browsers, at least in the latest months, on which we see that Chrome, for the generality of the users, have been growing a lot, and even finally beating Explorer. I think it was on May or early June. And anyway, the article is more about the usage of the browsers for web developers. And in terms of market share for web developers, the article shows some statistics based on the usage of browsers by developers that visit them. the PHP Classes site. This article is published on the PHP Classes site because it is a follow-up to other articles that published in the that's a lot related with JavaScript. It was published there, and then the figures it shows are based on statistics of that site, and they show that basically Firefox. And I don't know if it is very clear in the or not. Actually, yeah. Probably it's not clear. Even any clear at all, because the image seems to have blank.
It looked clear on this end. It came through.
Yeah. Is that for a moment I lost your voice?
I wasn't saying anything.
Yeah.
I was not. Okay.
Okay. Anyway, now that I got back to showing the actual page of the article, I don't know. I don't know if it is clear enough for everybody to read. But if those that cannot read it can see the actual numbers in the page. And basically, the article shows that Firefox is still the preference of the majority of the developers. That but despite it has lost like almost 10% for Chrome in the last year. And the article that basically mentioned reasons why Firefox is still better for web developers. It mentioned several reasons that I've covered in the last year's article, but this year I had the opportunity to talk with a Googler, Renato Mangini from Google Chrome Developers Relations Team, that I met in an event at Google held recently here in Brazil. The event was not about the web development, but it was interesting because he covered several interesting features of Chrome that are, I would say, available, and some of them overcome some of the complaints that in last year's article. But what I still wanted to comment on this article is that some features are still not addressed very well, and the other features were addressed with some enhancements that are somewhat, I would say, hidden or maybe provided in some obscure way, like buttons that are available and buried on preferences pages that even if you are a developer, somebody has to tell you that the feature is there, and you won't be able to know. Like, for instance, now there is the possibility in the Chrome browser to switch the user agent identification, so you can pretend to be accessing from a different browser to test your server-side application. And this is just one of the several of the issues that I mentioned. And in the latest Chrome versions, it is possible to switch the user agent name to something else that you won't want to emulate. But if Renato did not tell me that feature was there, I wouldn't know. Michael, did you read the article? What did you think about the issues and the comments that were presented?
Well, you actually gave a you had sent me something a little bit before that about that you were, I think, going to be talking to him. Is that right? Whoever, Renato, I think.
Yes, actually, just to clarify, I met Renato in the event, and I told him about this article, the top 10 reasons, the article of the past year, and he wanted to know what I was raising as issues. And later, after the event, I sent him the article link, and right away he commented on those topics, and those comments that he sent are in italic in the article.
Yeah.
So
I'm. Chrome is taking off for a number of reasons. It's fast. It's fast. It has a strong compatibility with Safari. So if you write something for Safari, it's going to look good there. Google mobile Chrome on Android. There's a lot of reasons why Chrome is taking off that aren't necessarily to do with it being better for developers or not in an abstract sense. But if it helps you make a better Android app or helps you, with making sure your stuff works in WebKit and looks good on Safari, you're gonna use that regardless. So I was not overly impressed with some of the stuff, but Chrome isn't doing this very good. I don't think any browser makers are doing this very good. The idea of preferences and I'm looking at the Firefox right now, the nightly of Firefox, which is I'm several versions in the future, and when I go to preferences, I just get eight icons. This is just confusing as heck, and everything is equal.
Yeah.
This idea, his thing is what you said. You can't turn off JavaScript. Oh well, you can go in here and do this, and users can do this. My goodness, there's a few major things that everybody in the world. For developers, many of us care, JavaScript or not. To me, the biggest thing is cookies. And Chrome, from a user experience, still takes a very engineer's, developer-centric viewpoint on cookies. Safari does.
Yeah.
Nobody has a good view on this at all. And until they make things that are really, really, really easily understandable in plain user English or Portuguese or whatever it may be, plain user language, I'm not going to be really impressed with the stuff. Yeah, technically, they've got faster this, and they've got that feature and all that, but you just caught me in a bad mood right now. I don't really care for any of the browsers.
Yeah. No, I perfectly agree with you. It's the usability of these browsers, even for developers, is getting a nightmare precisely because they have so many features and they are so buried somewhere deep in the user interface.
Standard things that I might want to do all the time are buried is the wrong word, but they're given equal weight with everything else. Like,
yeah.
I have to somehow know that cookies are in privacy because they didn't used to be there, and then they get moved under something called privacy. I don't think of cookies as, that's privacy, and that's scary, or that's secure data. It's a cookie. It's just a key-value pair. Just make a button that says, you want to see your cookies? Press it, and have a little thing on the side that's always floating that says, here's all your cookies and values. You want to delete them? I think Ghostery or something, some ghost. There's some plugins that do some of this stuff, but these sorts of things could be standard as part of what, because people understand pretty quickly, the home button is this, the back button is this, the reload button is this, and if you had a browser maker that was man enough, to be sexist here for a moment, man enough to just say, we're going to introduce a couple of things to educate people so they actually understand what the hell is going on, instead of, let's bury it, let's make it really hard to find, let's make it confusing, let's throw a bunch of technical terms, and what do you end up with? You end up with the kind of legislation that we have in Europe that says, cookies, if you hit the word cookies, oh my gosh, we're going to have laws, and you can't do cookies, can't do cookies. It's insane.
Yeah.
So browser makers, I think you all have really, you've all dropped the ball. You're about 10 years behind where you should be in terms of things that actually help people get stuff done. We're fighting you.
Yeah,
there you go. Okay, you asked me what I thought.
Let's start a movement to make browsers more usable, at least for developers. I cannot even imagine for regular users, because it's probably even worse. And, I agree, and I think they are so much obsessed with the competition between browsers that they forget to make things usable. And despite there is the possibility to use extensions that bring back more usability, like some bloody button to turn off JavaScript or turn on, depending on what you want to do, right in the button bar instead of below 7 pages of reference.
Because we know, we all know.
To realize where they are.
Yeah. Regular users install plugins all the time for their browsers, especially ones that say, hey, this thing isn't signed. Do you want to do it? Anyway, it's not signed. Could break your computer.
Yeah.
Wait 9 seconds and click install. Are you really sure?
Well, I think regular users do not even read. They just go on the next finish protocol and they move on, and hopefully nobody invades their computers. No security hazard happens, but sometimes
you caught me in a bad mood, and I could rant for another 3 or 4 minutes, but we should probably move on because people don't want to hear my rants anymore.
No, actually, I totally agree with you, and that is basically my main concern about this this article is browsers evolved, but they have now so many features that it seems that the browser developers do not know what is important for this, each type of audience. And if I tell them that it's not easy to find a button to turn off JavaScript, they say, no, there is in that page and that page. Well, for Chrome credit, at least, I don't know if Firefox is anything similar. There is a search box in the preferences page when you want to know where is JavaScript being enabled and disabled. So we don't have to figure all 30 tabs that you have to go through. But at least that's it's just a small pain reliever, because we have still to find the option, but at least it cuts down a few aspects. If you already realize that the feature of searching for our preferences is there, because I'm sure many developers, as experienced as developers usually are, probably they also have not figured that possibility. I don't know. I have the last version that I tried for Firefox does not even have that possibility to search for settings.
No. It still doesn't. So
yet this is yet another point that Firefox also has to catch up. It's not just Chrome.
Yeah.
Well, at least there are many extensions that make our lives better. And if it was not for articles like this, and also the cooperation of Renato that fortunately I met in person, and he was kind enough to share all those information and all those information details, and I wrote this article in the hope that since it helped me to make a better use of Chrome, hopefully it will help other developers to also make a good user of the browser features and not get so much buried and in user interface bureaucracy. Well, that's also my rant too. And anyway,
go.
I think I made clear my point that things in the article that usability of the actual browsers still has to improve. Now that they include more complex features, and they will include even more in future versions.
Sure.
Well, there will be a lot more to say about this article, but we don't have the time. We need to move on to our next one of the final sections of the podcast, on which we comment on the latest classes, objects published on JS classes site. Michael, would you like to start?
Well, there's a couple that jumped out at me. One is recent, just a couple days ago. This is L.js, which is a very short name for a loader. This is from John, can I say John Gotti? Jonathan Gotti? Hope I'm saying that right. I don't think it's John Gotti.
Yeah.
From France. And it's there's actually a README that explains a little bit more about what's going on with the documentation, but it's just an extremely small JavaScript and CSS loader where you can define what files you want to be loaded and in what order, and it will do them in parallel to the best that it can, and you can assign callbacks to be define callbacks to be executed after each thing is successfully loaded or not. So if you are into the idea of loaders, there have been a lot of loader systems that have come out in the JavaScript world in the past several years to make it easier for you to programmatically say this has to be loaded before this and so on. You know, this is a good example of just the those mechanics of writing something to be very, very tiny.
Yeah. And this, it also, as you somewhat suggested, not only it is able to let you define the order of loading, but also it also avoids loading some libraries more than once in case you have dependencies of different components on the same library.
Yep.
Probably make it confusing, but it addresses that problem too.
Yep, definitely another good point. Yeah, that's and loaders have never been my thing, but I have not focused on the some of the performance gains and whatnot that you can get, or the dependency management. I guess I'm just not doing JavaScript enough to be at that level of complexity where that would be a real benefit to me, but it certainly is to some people, and I thought that was a good example from Jonathan Gotti. Thank you, from France, and also Daniel Martinez from Spain, or España, as they call it in Spain, has contributed an image cropper, which I was playing with earlier. I like the example use that he's got. I might be able to bring up a screen share of this if I can, which is, come on.
Click the browser doesn't crash.
Don't think it'll crash. We've all seen image croppers. You get the idea of I can select a certain part of an area. I can resize this and make it smaller, and we see the values over there. So we can click get values, and we'll get a JSON object that tells us specifically what area was cropped, and we could send that to the server or do something on the client side. Whatever we wanted to do. So again, it's not. This isn't earth shattering. It's not. Oh my gosh, this is a game changer. We've seen these sorts of tools before, but I thought it was done nicely. And if only to learn how other people look at these sorts of things and learn from them, this would be a great thing to look at. But you may actually need this sort of thing too. It's surprising because there's a lot of toolkits out there that I see, a lot of JavaScript toolkits that don't include something like that. The big boys have it in a lot of their online tools, image editing tools, but there's a lot of JavaScript toolkits that don't come with something like that. So you know, if you need it, there it is.
Yeah, that's really cool, although as you said, it's not really innovative. There have been many components to do this, but this one looked particularly nice, and kudos to Daniel for sharing yet another great component along with others along with others that he sent before. And on my part, I would like to comment also on a couple of components. We had more to comment about, and unfortunately we do not have the time, just to comment on a couple of components. One basically is yet another component by Arthur Sossins, and this one lets you stack elements of a container in different layers and do some animation aspect effects on with the layers. The demo is quite impressive. Unfortunately, I do not have the time to show it in detail, but it shows an egg being peeled, just playing with effects of layers of pictures on top of others, and it's quite interesting, very impressive. Kudos to Artus for yet another impressive component. And,
yes.
But now moving on to another interesting component. This one is not so evident what it does. It's a component for Martin Baker. He has been contributing several components for to assist in development of games. Regular features that you need in games, like manipulating objects in Canvas. And in this case, despite the name of the package, Canvas Game FPS Engine includes the name Canvas, it's not exactly about Canvas. It's more about adjusting the rendering frame rate. If you have a game that you need to update several objects that appear on screen, and you want to it to appear smoothly, you have to assure that the frames of the game are updated at a minimum rate to make it smooth. But if you have enough CPU power or graphics power, you can probably update it even on a much faster rate than it would be necessary. But in that case, it would probably be wasting too much CPU that could be used better for other purposes. So this component lets you adjust the frame rate of a game to a certain limit and make it more assured that it is smooth enough, but not faster than it needs to be.
Yeah.
And this is quite an advanced component, right? And I'm sure that those that have dealt with games probably see the need for this. Not sure if the others that never programmed games will find it interesting, but it's still a very useful component by Martin Barker from the UK. So kudos for him.
Thank you, Martin.
Michael, you were going to say something, or
I was going to. I said thank you, Martin. I said gracias, Martin. Martin Baker.
No, I think he understands English.
Well, yeah, that's why I said thank you.
Yeah, I was wondering if you were going to emulate the British accent.
Free fighting, mate.
Okay. Well, there are many other classes being published. Fortunately, the site is ramping up also thanks to the initiative of the Innovation Award Challenge that hopefully sooner rather than later we'll get to the goal of reaching 200 classes being published before the end of the year. And the as prize, the five top developers that have publish more notable packages until they get to goal will get a nice elephant that will be given as a symbolic prize. It's not really related to JavaScript, it's more about PHP, but I just wanted to mention that the elephants are about to arrive. I suppose they would arrive today so I could show them, but unfortunately they did not arrive, they probably arrived tomorrow, but I'm sure next month they will be.
Manana.
I'll probably pile them here on my back to show to everybody else. Anyway, finally get going to one final section on which I hope you, Michael, is ready to.
I got a couple of things here. Issues. One, JavaScript Magazine. Actually. I repeat this, and I get people occasionally reaching out from the podcast here. We're always looking for writers for JavaScript Magazine, jsmag.com, as well as Groovy Mag. Probably most people watching or listening to this are not into Groovy, but if you are, please reach out. We'd love to have you contribute. I'm actually going to the Great Conference, GR8, in Minneapolis, leaving Sunday. I'm going to be there Monday and Tuesday, and I'll be there next Wednesday. If anybody happens to watch this and would like to meet for lunch next Wednesday in Minneapolis, let me know. JS Mag, we have some things coming up for our August issue. We have Mike Schwartz continuing his series of talking about his SilkJS. He wrote OSGI or JSGI style web server using just pthreads and the V8 JavaScript engine. So he details some of the mechanics of what he worked on and how he did that. We have Jonathan LeBlanc, who's written for us in the past, doing a piece on Node.js, a mashup of Node.js and QL.io. And QL.io is a tool that was, I think, originally built by eBay, and it's a way of consuming large amounts of data and I don't want to say doing a mashup, but consuming large amounts of eBay amounts of data and processing that. The article is about processing that with Node.js. We have a second half of an article from Robert Fisher about his jQuery periodical updater, which was a port of the earlier prototype periodical updater. We've got a piece from Dr. Jeanine Meyer, about SVG. She's done a few pieces on SVG techniques with JavaScript manipulation. So we've got those. May have a couple other things coming up as well, but that's what's slated for August. I can't believe it's almost August already. And lastly, it's time, IndieConf, our freelance conference, which is going to be November 17th. We have call for papers open through mid-August. We're going to have 20 or 21 speaking sessions so far. That may change, but it'll probably be 21 like last year. A one full day event, three separate tracks. Right now, we've got, I think, 10 or 15 that have come in terms of actual sessions that have been proposed, and there's some others. We've got about, total, there's about 20 that I'm sorting through right now, but there's another couple weeks, and I hope to have a few more to have to cull through. I'd like to be able to say no to more people. We said no to a lot of people last year. I'd like to say no to more people this year. Not that I like saying no, but it just means that everybody else who said yes to was that much more on topic, so...
Yeah, and what is exactly will be those three tracks that you have?
Well, they're not necessarily three tracks, I should say. We have three rooms, but we talk about we have separate sessions. It's largely the business side of freelancing, the finance, the legal, the business, the marketing, the accounting, things like that. We probably will have we had a workshop on public speaking last year. We had some SEO stuff. There'll probably be some technical things. We've had Zoe Gillenwater, who's written a great book. I think she's done a couple books for Peach Pit Press on CSS3. Phenomenal, very well attended presentation last year. We may have some of those videos up. We have a few videos up from last year. I have them finally in digital format, but processing and uploading takes a while. But we've got the four up from last year, which give a pretty good cross section of things. Talking to some people who are mobile game developers, like indie studios, mm-hmm. just a couple guys that work on that. They may be coming and sharing their story. So I've been able over the last year to reach out to more people who are indie businesses who work on the web, and they have a technical background, but they're not just doing software development. That's a portion, but they're not just doing contract work for hire, which I think a lot of people in my position that do contract work for hire are looking for. How do I make that transition into building more of a stable business? So I think we'll have a bit more of that this year than we've had in the previous couple of years. Yeah, but call for papers, indieconf.com. Please submit by mid-August.
Okay, so the mid-August is the timeline and the deadline for call for papers, and then the choice of the talks will be announced when?
I don't know exactly. Probably end of August.
Yeah, and the event, exactly what is the date?
November 17th, which is a Saturday.
Oh, that's fine. There's plenty of time.
Yeah.
Okay, I hope you have a crowded event once again.
So do I.
And, this has been an interesting show. Unfortunately, we do not have much time, but we'll always be getting back next month with more interesting topics. And feel free to contact us if you want to submit articles, not just for the JS Mag, but also for the JS Classes blog.
Yep.